Welcome to For the Health of It, an intimate look at public health in Cowley County, Kansas. Join us as we discuss topics that are impacting public health in our community and learn about what we do at your local health department. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of For the Health of It, Cowley County. I'm Tom Langer, the public health officer and your host, and today's topic is going to be preparedness, what it is, what the health department does, and what we do within the community. So our title for today is Ready or Not, and the guests that I have with me, as always, is Allie, who is my right hand and helps me do everything at the health department, it seems. Allie, how are you doing today?
I am doing well.
Great. Glad to have you along. We also have at the table two of my, I guess you'd call them preppers or feppers. We're going to talk a lot about acronyms today because this is the valley of the acronym. With me are Tanner and Daniel, who both work in the FEP realm. Tanner, how you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Great. And Daniel, you are the, you know, the silent Daniel of the health department. How are you doing today, my man?
Not too bad. How are you doing, sir?
Well, not bad at all. We're going to start off by talking broad strokes and acronyms and all of that good stuff. Who wants to weigh in first? I'm gonna call on you. This is like going to class. So, Tanner, would you please explain to everybody who FEMA is?
Sure. We could even start a little bit before that and talk about what general preparedness is as well. Preparedness in the public health world and in any sort of emergency management world is just a measure of somebody's readiness or ability to respond well to any sort of disaster or emergency situation. This can be large disasters such as significant weather events or chemical spills or anything like that that affects a lot of people very quickly, or it can even be small events like a child getting injured during an event or during recess, or somebody coming down with a contagious illness in the home. Being able to respond to that quickly and effectively directly comes from the amount of preparedness and readiness that you have for those situations. Both on an organizational level and at home, preparedness helps people be able to respond to their environment and changes within that in a quick and effective manner.
Hey, Daniel, tell me, how often do disasters strike?
Disasters are extremely common. One of the stats that I had read before recording was that around 88.5% of all counties in the United States have had a disaster declaration at some point in the past 20 years.
Okay, so Allie, I've got a question for you. Our roles in disasters, they all change, right?
Yeah.
What do you see as your role at the health department if a disaster were to strike?
I would say that my first responsibility would be to respond to whatever it is that you need as your assistant, so I'm sure that you would direct me wisely. But really the second thing that I would be doing as our epidemiologist would be assessing what kind of risks there might be to people's health in that manner.
Okay, so what we've basically laid out in then here is the reason that we're doing this today is because disasters can strike at any time. We all have varying roles and responsibilities, and preparedness helps us handle these things as they come up, to where there's not so much chaos?
Yes, it imposes a sense of order and a little bit of organization over something that normally would be very chaotic. Being able to respond in that kind of organized fashion eliminates a lot of unnecessary energy expended towards unguided action.
All right, now that takes us to where we wanted to go, or where I was jumping too quickly. Tell me, Tanner, who is FEMA?
FEMA, or the Federal Emergency Management Agency, basically does what their name implies. They manage emergencies on a national scale. Many FEMA programs are extended out to the states and through those states, the local counties, but they oversee programs that have an effect on a national level or on the majority of the nation itself. Personally, a big one that I know of is floods and floodplain management. You know, it does not matter what part of the country that you are in or what weather that you are inclined to experience in various different geographical areas, one constant that typically accompanies significant weather events is flooding. It can be snow runoff from the mountains and mudslides that California experiences very often, heavy rainfall and sheet flow that here in the Midwest we see quite a bit, storm surges and tsunamis for those coastal lying areas, hurricanes, major rain events everywhere. So on a federal level, this organization does these kind of things, and they extend those programs to the states as well.
Daniel, FEMA, they're part of what overarching government?
I believe it's the Department of Homeland Security,
right?
Yes.
They moved there, what, after?
They moved there after Katrina, or no, after 9/11, actually, yeah.
So this is where that all flows from. It's all part of Homeland Security and comes down. Now, within the framework that we follow and that we learn as members of the health department, because everybody has to go through that, there is a particular type of training that everybody goes through that works here. It's called ICS training, right? We again, talking about acronyms. So Daniel, tell us about ICS and what that is.
ICS is the Incident Command System, which is essentially a scalable model that you can use to manage incidents. So what is an incident? An incident could be a disaster. It could be a local event. It could be anything. So it can be applied to incidents of all sizes, and so it's very scalable. So it can apply from things like a police officer managing a simple fender bender on the road, all the way up to something that's a national emergency, like a large hurricane that hits multiple states and the like.
Right. So whenever we have an event, a parade, the fair, Walnut Valley, all of those things, Arkalala, there is generally some form of incident command that is set up and followed to make sure that everything is organized and response is good. And then we also have another thing underneath that, which is called NIMS. Who wants to talk about NIMS?
I can certainly talk about NIMS. NIMS is the National Incident Management System, and is basically the system that is applied to ICS in order to respond effectively to whatever incident is being addressed. NIMS allows for the various branches and arms of the ICS system to be adapted, applied, or removed as necessary. It basically allows everything with its small core to function independently of anything else and maintain a continuity of operations within that system in order to continue to respond effectively.
Okay, so now let's talk about how emergency response is structured at the state and local levels. You know, we've talked about what happens at the federal level, and then at the state level, we have the Kansas Department of Emergency Management, KDEM, which you will hear referred to in news. And then we also have the Kansas Department of Health and Environment, KDHE, which we are closely connected with. They are the state health department. We are the local health department. And those two arms extend down locally into our local emergency management office, which we have here in Cowley County, and the health department, because we are a key contributor to emergency response and the preparation and planning for that. Now, let's talk a little bit about why a health department is involved in emergency planning to begin with. Allie, this is where you're going to come in, because when we talked early on and we said, well, what's the roles in emergency response for a health department, it all gets covered under the emergency support functions. Tanner, talk a little bit about what emergency support functions are.
Sure. ESFs, or like you said, emergency support functions, are basically just the grouping of governmental and certain private sector services in order to maintain basic services and ensure that there is safety and life continuity for people affected by particular disasters. They are grouped by types of disasters or incidents, and we at the health department are primarily concerned with ESF 8, which is public health and medical aid.
Okay. And so when we contribute to the support or the planning at the county level, our responsibilities deal with any incidents, Daniel, is this right, that would impact health? And we sit there and say health and safety because they kind of tie together, but it's actually the impacts on human health that would occur during a disaster. Is that right? Did I state that correctly?
Absolutely.
All right. So that's where we're going to go. And then Allie, this is where you come in, because tell me, what are some of the things that might happen during a disaster that would impact human health?
Well, it would depend on the disaster, of course, but we've been in what some would consider a disaster for the past 3 years with the COVID pandemic. And so a lot of our responsibility in the ESF 8 realm was public health surveillance and paying attention to those trends.
Yeah, and that's also why during the pandemic, it was a long and drawn out process because of the fact that we had to manage the ongoing effects of what was going on with the viral incidents itself, and then also distributing countermeasures or antivirals, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm trying to paint this out so people can understand the, again, just how this all fits together and why it's an important thing. So now, we've covered most of that. Let's get into the stuff that I think people could really, you know, get their arms around. And let's talk about what happens when we have a storm, okay? We're going to start with a storm event. 2 weeks or so ago, we had, you know, a really bad storm. Right now, we are actually in the midst of a really late summer heat wave that has, you know, could have serious health consequences. All of these things affect people and their health. But let's talk first about what our responsibilities would be. What would the health department's responsibility be in, and I'm going to set the scenario, instead of this storm coming back a couple weeks ago being just the bad windstorm that we had, what if it was a tornado and we had people that were injured, hurt, or maybe even killed?
So I can go ahead and start with that. Some of the HD responsibilities that, you know, we would run into is definitely like mass care, as well as almost mass casualty and mass fatality treatments. You know, it's kind of macabre to think about, and it's not something we want to think about every day, but Cowley County's ability to deal with cadavers and fatalities is somewhat limited. Once we hit the precipice of 3 fatalities, an event is considered a mass fatality event, because that's essentially our morgue capacity. So now we have to activate our partnerships with some of our regional partners, including Sedgwick County and Butler County, to kind of expand that capability outwards and deploy resources in order to be able to deal with the aftermath of that. Not only that, but we would also have injuries or potential exposures to contaminants and sicknesses that you otherwise wouldn't see because of the destruction of shelter, as well as the exposure to some environmental hazards like rusted metal, you know, impacts from debris, tainted water supplies, things like that. So all of that falls under the jurisdiction of the health department to address in some capacity.
Okay, so we don't want to get too deep into the woods. We try to keep this where people, again, can think about it. I know that there are a lot of folks out there that they're glad they don't have to worry about this kind of stuff, because we do. But what is it when we have, you know, these types of storms? How do we know when we're going to be activated? I think it's all going to be based upon the severity of the event. Okay, and here's something that I think people should really understand. When these events happen, storms of any type, winter storms, you know, summer, spring, fall, whatever it is, we own the event. In other words, we as a community, it's ours. It's our response. We're the first ones to have to respond. When we take a look back 2 weeks ago, we had the bad storm damage. We had power out across town, all over the place. We had, tree limbs that they're still cleaning up. We still have them laying around in parts of town. We had to respond. Nobody was here to help us. We had to get out and clean up our own yards. We had to get the tree limbs out of our driveways, do all this stuff. It's our event. So preparedness at our level, our own individual level, is going to be very, very important. We cannot anticipate, like you do in a hurricane, that we're going to have this mass casualty or fatality event and put some of the things that we have up already, because there's just not enough time. Sometimes they strike without warning. When we talk about pre-positioning assets, like they do in a hurricane, that's because they know they have those forecasts that are coming in, and they can put things out there when they know it's going to make landfall and be ready in advance. We don't have that opportunity to do that here, do we, Tanner?
Not very often. We get some warning that a significant weather cell is moving through, but we have no idea what it could expand to or if it will diminish before it even hits.
And sometimes that's still not even enough. I was asleep.
Right.
With this last storm.
It came wet around between 6:30 in the morning. A lot of people were. I had no idea it was coming until I heard something flying off the roof of my house. And I thought, oh, this is not good. You know, so we've got those things to be concerned about. Now, you know, we know that, but that there are assets that we talk about that are preparedness assets that are around the community. Aren't there, Daniel, things like pre-established storm shelters and what have you?
There are going to be some storm shelters in Arkansas City. However, here in Winfield, there are actually no public tornado shelters and the like.
Which is sad. I wish that we could address that as a community, but because I know there are a lot of homes in the city of Winfield that don't have basements. They don't have places to go. And we're just one really big storm away from it being exceptionally dangerous. So that brings us to the next step then, is that what do individuals have to do? Because this is where Ready or Not comes from. This is where we as individuals have a responsibility to ourselves, to our families, to our community, to not just sit idly by and wait for something to happen before we think about how we're going to respond, but making sure that we as individuals and families have a plan. And Dan, this is where we go a lot with what you work on, and that's getting ready to make sure people have a plan. Do we want to talk about that just for a second?
Absolutely. One of the key parts of preparedness on the individual level, so you and your family on your level, you have a part to play in being prepared. And a big part of that is having that plan in place. And having the plan in place requires you to ask questions about what you would do. Play these scenarios out in your head. If there is a tornado comes through town, where would I go? Do I have a shelter that I can go to? Do I have supplies to last in case the power gets knocked out? How am I going to get in contact with my loved ones if I'm separated from them? So asking yourself these questions and figuring out those answers is a big part of how you create your plan. And FEMA's website, ready.gov, actually has a lot of really good, high-quality templates that you can use to start creating a emergency plan as well as an emergency communications plan.
Yeah. Does it cost anything to make a plan?
Nope, not a cent.
I mean, so this is really just basically sitting around a, you know, dinner table or having a meeting with your family and actually saying, hey, let's play this out. Let's play a game. Let's role play and say, what would we do, right? I mean, how would you go about doing it, Tanner?
Well, one of the easiest ways is to really just sit down and walk through as a timeline, step by step, on what happens the day before, the day of, and the day after. So the day before, maybe we know that we have the potential for severe weather. So we sit down, and what do we make sure we do? We make sure that all of our phones are charged. We have a method of communication. We make sure that we've got, you know, good access to bottled water, for instance, for a clean drinking source, or non-perishable foods that can maybe tide us over in the event of something happening.
We'll get to the kit in a minute.
Sure.
Okay. But right now, I mean, I'm talking about just going through the process of the plan. Allie, here's a question for you. Is this plan just going to be for storms, or is it going to be for basically anything else? What happens if your smoke alarm goes off at home?
Yeah, exactly. All of those things need to be discussed, and they need to be discussed with your whole family. Everybody needs to know what to do if something like that happens.
Exactly. I mean, we're talking about preparedness at the individual level, because what we know is a disaster can strike any time, and it doesn't have to be even community-wide. It could just impact your family. And how well you are prepared is going to really, I think, have a great impact on how quickly you can respond to the accident or the emergency, and then how quickly you will recover and get back to normal. Because that's truthfully what preparedness is all about, is making us get, you know, having a way through these disasters and understanding the steps we'd have to take before it happens so that we're able to return to normal again as quickly as possible. I'm going to jump over a couple of things real quick because I don't want to get us too deep into the weeds, but we have other types of events that we are always going to be involved in at the health department. We talked about ESF8 and the fact that it's a health-centered type of a response. So we will have things like Allie mentioned at the very beginning, the pandemic or some type of a virus or, you know, bacterial type response that we have to mobilize for on the medical side, right?
Yes.
That's one other one. And then there's another one that we don't talk about much, but you will see it in the news quite often. Tanner, what do we have running through most all of Cowley County, kind of north to south, and even some a little bit east to west?
Major rail lines.
Yes, exactly right. And what goes up and down those train tracks every single day?
Cargo
all
freight.
All sorts of things.
Cargo freight, coal, petroleum containers, chemical containers, et cetera, so on and so forth.
And so what would happen if one of those little bad boys derailed, you know, just to the outskirts of Arc City or in the yard in Arc City or you know, along the switch up here by the fairgrounds? Do you think something like that went off the rails and spilled, and we all of a sudden maybe had an anhydrous cloud or something like that floating around. Is that going to constitute an emergency?
Oh, yeah. We've all seen the major headlines recently of, you know, major train derailments, chemical spills, and the follow-up handling. And it's important to respond effectively to those. You know, we hope it never happens, but we can't plan for it to never happen because anything that can go wrong will go wrong eventually.
Yeah, that is so, so true. And I mentioned this before when I first came to Cali County, how easy this role was for me because I was not personally connected to the community at that point in time, and how every year that goes by, as you develop friendships and you know, you become more and more part of the community, it becomes more and more difficult because now I'm sitting here looking at, you know, and planning for things that I mean, would make me not sleep at nights if it actually happened. But now I'm thinking about how do we deal with something like this when it's my friends or it's my family that could be impacted. Whereas when you're moved way at a distance, it's not quite as personal, you know, and it doesn't affect you that way. That is the amazing thing. I read a book recently called Without Warning, and it's the account of what happened in the town of Udall in 1955 when in May a tornado came through, an F5 tornado, and basically just wiped that town off the map and the people that lived through it and the survivors. I really recommend anybody that gets into planning, especially in Cali County, reads that book. It's an amazing story about the resilience of our communities, which I think speaks volumes even till today. But the crazy part about it is when you read it, doing the work that we do, I see nothing but incident command. You know, I want to jump into the book and take over and say, here, wait a minute, we know how to respond to these things. So we're not going to talk a whole bunch about that other than we want people to realize that we do have those things under control. And now we're going to come back to talking personal preparedness and about not just having the plan, but having a kit.
Right. You know, and looking at a lot of these incidents or hypotheticals that we've brought up, you know, severe weather events, biological outbreak or viral outbreak or something along those lines, you know, chemical spill or hazardous materials spill or contamination. A lot of those things, while very different in nature, on the personal level, boils down to a lot of the same stuff. You know, in the event of a storm, you've got floodwaters and you've got surface contaminants. You're going to need a source of drinking water if your primary source gets contaminated. This is especially a problem for people with private wells. That's going to be the same concern if, you know, there's a chemical spill in the area, for example, as that tends to pollute water supplies. So a lot of these things have a lot of layover, even if they're very different events. So we won't go super in-depth to what everything that should be in the kit is, because for different families, that's going to vary. But there are some highlights that you should make sure that you're considering. So I've hammered on it quite a bit, but number one, clean and safe drinking water. Always should be available.
Okay, what else? Daniel, what else do we have in there other than water?
You're also going to want some non-perishable food items as well. So things like canned vegetables or ready-to-eat canned meat and the like.
So, and let me ask you a question. In light of what happened a couple of weeks ago, do you have to have food that you can just open up and eat, or are you going to be able to cook?
That depends on what you have. If you have a camping stove, a propane one, then cooking will be obviously on the menu, so to speak. However, if your power is out, don't have a camping stove, don't have any way of cooking food, then you're going to have to rely on food that is ready to eat and non-perishable.
Allie, what about individuals that might need medicine?
Yeah, you'd better make sure that you have that on hand. So don't let yourself run out, and make sure that you have enough at all times to sustain yourself for several days.
We talk about having at least a 5-day supply. I probably say even more of that if you can, you know, I know medications might have a shelf life, but I'm talking about if you have to have like prescription drugs for managing a chronic condition like diabetes, or, you know, if you need insulin, things like that, you have to have it, because if you don't, your life could be in immediate peril. What else is out there that we would need for like maybe little ones?
Yeah, absolutely. If you have infants, you're going to make sure that you have all of the things that they would need for a few days. Same type of thing if you have pets. any of their medication? How are you going to feed them?
Yeah, any pet owners here?
Yes.
So this is an interesting thing, because we've learned this in emergency response over time, that a lot of people will not leave their homes if they have to leave their pets behind. So if there was like an evacuation situation, and you know, I pulled up in the door and I had the big bus, and I says, Tanner, you get to go, and you had dogs down my side, but I'm sorry, you can't bring your dog. What's the probability that you're going to go?
Very, very low.
Yeah, very low. So we have to keep those things in mind, you know, and you also have to have a plan for them. So you might want to have a carrier. You want to know what's going to happen with my pet in the event that we have an emergency where we're going to be displaced or our house is gone, God forbid. So those are things that people need to think about and need to plan for, which goes all the way back to that need for a proper plan, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about events like what happened a couple of weeks ago, where we didn't lose our homes, but we certainly all of a sudden kind of lost mobility. Because I know in my neighborhood, trying to get out one way was covered by tree limbs and branches. Trying to get out another way was covered by tree limbs and branches. I was pretty much stuck until those things could get cleared out of the roadways. What happens if we had to evacuate in a storm like that?
Yeah, and a lot of this circles back around to being alert and aware of the conditions that you're living in, and being able to identify those avenues should something happen along those lines, that you're aware of the possibility of those happening, goes a long way into formulating that plan, even if it's just the day before. So maybe identifying somewhere that you can get to on foot, or a meeting point in the community where a major roadway is likely to be accessible, or we can even organize members of the community to make that roadway accessible. You know, that we talk about fallen limbs and fallen trees blocking the road. You as a person are highly unlikely to be able to clear that yourself. Five community members, on the other hand, can pool their labor or their resources together to be able to clear out those obstructions.
So be good neighbors, in other words. Make sure that your neighbors are all right, and offer a hand if need be. Is that what you're telling me?
Absolutely. And it's not even just a charity thing. It's not just being nice. Helping your neighbors helps you in a direct way.
Sure. Absolutely. Daniel, so, you know, we've talked about having to, you know, go through the entire process and huddle down at home. But what happens in the event that you do have to evacuate quickly and get out? All of the planning, I mean, here's I'm going to push back against your idea about planning. Say, I've got everything I need. My home, everything at home is my kit, right? I mean, I got tools. I got garden shed. You know, I've got all this stuff. You know, I got food in the cupboard. It's not going to really affect me, except for if I all of a sudden I had to leave, right?
Absolutely.
And then
yes.
What is it we want people to have ready to go if something like that were to happen?
Having a go kit, some kind of emergency kit that is portable, that is something you can take with you, is extremely important if you do have to leave your home suddenly. So having that kit pre-placed in your car or by your doorway, someplace easy to access and someplace that you and all of your family members know where it is, that's vitally important. For instance, for myself, my emergency kit, I usually keep in my car. I occasionally bring it out. I toss out any items that might have expired and the like, but I keep it in my car just in case for that.
Okay. What are some things that should go into a go kit?
Any of your personal documents. You don't know how long you're going to be displaced, so having those things on hand would be helpful. Maybe some cash.
The copies of those documents?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For your family.
List of prescriptions, you know, emergency contact information. Like you say, some money, hopefully, if you can. If not, you know, cards or something of that nature that you could have in there so that you could access. Because if you have to go somewhere and get into a hotel or a motel or something, you need to have a way of doing that, correct? Tanner, what else?
Something that people may not think about but is ubiquitous in today's society, almost everybody has one, is a way to keep your phone charged and alive. And that can be just, you know, a charger that by Goodwill or in a public place you can plug into a wall socket, or it can be a battery that you check weekly or every other week in order to keep it charged. Now, I wouldn't recommend putting a charged battery inside your car for an extended period of time, because heat tends to wreak havoc on those kind of things. But if it's a go kit that you keep in your house in a safe location or a well-known location for your family, then by all means, put one of those in there so you at least have some life beyond what the phone comes with. Yeah.
Daniel, we've talked a lot about other things that may or may not be in that kit, like, you know, a flashlight, of course, I think probably should be something that, that goes in. Maybe a small first aid kit. You know, again, I'm thinking about a go kit that's the size of maybe a carry-on bag or, a backpack that people could have that's just kind of an all-around emergency grab and go. If I had to hit the door running, that I would be able to grab and take with me to cover some of those initial basic needs until I could get assistance. But we've talked about being prepared for storms specifically, right? And there is one organization we really haven't talked about, and that's NOAA and the Weather Service and how we get information from them. Let's talk a little bit about weather radios and how they come and what they're used for.
Absolutely. Weather radios are radios that pick up certain frequencies that are known as weather stations, and these weather stations are operated by, ultimately, the big organization is NOAA, so NOAA, which stands for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. As an organization, they essentially take care of tracking weather events, ocean currents, climate, and a subsidiary organization of them is the National Weather Service. The National Weather Service is the organization that operates here within the United States. So many of our audience have phones of some kind, mobile devices, and NWS weather alerts. I'm sure everyone's gotten at least one or two of those recently or during the storm that occurred a couple weeks ago. National Weather Service is the one who sends those out.
Other than having the little radios, because I've had my own failures with that locally, and I have one in the house, and I've got one here in my office, and it doesn't go off all the time because, oddly enough, we're kind of in a little bit of a valley here in Winfield, and that radio broadcast kind of skips over us. I mean, to where it doesn't always go off. And so how can I, as an individual, stay connected to resources that will let me know when an emergency might take place? Tanner, any ideas?
Well, one of the things is that, you know, internet access is almost as far spread and far flung as radio stations.
Okay.
So keeping an eye on those, be it, you know, home Wi-Fi, home internet, making sure that you pay attention, or even just having, you know, an app on your phone that will give you an alert.
Oh, an app on our phone. Man, you've hit upon something. Daniel, do we have any kind of an app for a phone?
Oh, we absolutely do. The City Cali County Health Department does indeed have its own mobile app. It's available for Android and the iPhone as well. It's available in the Google Play or Apple Store. It's got an excellent, excellent weather notification feature. And you can also check the radar, check the forecast. It's a perfect device for keeping track of all of those wonderful weather alerts.
And Tanner, you know the folks over at EM, right?
I sure do.
Do they have something through the county that you can sign up for and get phone calls and all that kind of good stuff when something happens?
Yes, there is. It's called Cowley Alerts, and you can find it on Cali County's website.
You can probably hit our website, and it'll take you to it, right?
Correct.
So there's all kinds of things that are available to people. And, of course, you know, when I was growing up, we had to listen to the radio. And I don't, you know, I haven't listened to the radio for storm information for a little while. But it is out there, and I think people really need to make themselves aware of what they have access to and do it. Now, Allie, I'm going to make a hard pivot here, okay? And we're going to come back to the medical side of things, all right? Let's imagine for a minute we had an emergency. We had a really bad storm. Houses were damaged, not just, well, even just with the trees. And I mentioned this to you guys in the office. I said, you know, what was really amazing was, like, within an hour or so after the storm had passed, in my neighborhood, I heard no fewer than 6 chainsaws going, you know. And I know that it was just homeowners, you know, my neighbors, that we were out cutting limbs and clearing stuff up. What happens, or what are we putting ourselves in harm's way doing when we're out there doing that kind of work?
Yeah, so when you're doing that type of work, you're exposing yourself to all kinds of different things. There is actually a bacterium that lives most commonly in soils. So if you were to cut yourself, you could then make yourself susceptible to that. That bacterium, it's protected when it's in the soil, but once it is in your body and begins to reproduce, it starts to produce a neurotoxin. This would lead to muscle contractions. It is known as tetanus, or the bacterium is Clostridium tetani. That bacterium, once it sets, those muscle contractions begin, and you might begin to experience what they call lockjaw. It's really not good for you. It can even be fatal sometimes. So the best way to help yourself there would be to make sure that you are up to date on all of your tetanus vaccines, that you've had a booster in the last 10 years. And if you're unsure, come to the health department anyway, and we'll figure it out.
Yeah. We can probably help them look that information up even by just a phone call.
Oh, right? Very easily. Yeah.
So this is one of those calls to action. Hey, if you're working, if you're planning, even if it's not an emergency, maybe you've got a job that you're wanting to do around the house where you're going to be swinging a hammer or using saws and such, and you might be prone to an injury, make sure you are up to date on your vaccinations. Because I mentioned the book, Without Warning, 55, there was one of the survivors who was a community leader in Udall at the time, and I don't recall the name. I'd have to look it up in the book, but he survived the storm and immediately went to work helping get his neighbors and other survivors, helping his community recover, and he did not seek medical attention for some minor wounds, and 2 weeks later, he died. Exactly of that, of lockjaw, of tetanus. And sadly enough, that was absolutely preventable, because had he received that, which was available, but he just didn't, it wasn't there on site, which is another thing that I do know, that in emergency response today, which is different than it was in 1955, we would probably mobilize and go be real close to where those people are to help them out. But it was, again, a really strong lesson of where these things come from and why it's so important. So we've talked about, being able to prepare, to have a plan, to be able to monitor local conditions and know everything that's going on. What else is there that we should be doing just on a daily basis to make sure that we're always ready for the unexpected?
Really, the biggest thing is to pay attention. Alerts will come out. Weather events will happen. It's not going to be incredibly effective all the time, especially for the unexpected, like a train derailment or an outbreak, but there will be notifications and alerts and communication that comes out from every single entity that is even tangentially involved with any incident about ongoing events, the potential for events, and what the response is going to look like.
Okay. Daniel, people that say, oh man, I just can't plan. I don't understand how to do this. You've talked a little bit about where templates are and all of that. Are there other places or resources around where they might be able, a person who is maybe struggling with the concept might be able to get some help as far as putting together a personal plan?
Sure, absolutely. Besides ready.gov, which as I mentioned before, is an excellent resource for preparedness in all of its aspects and across all the different disaster types. But besides them, you can always give us a call. We're more than happy to guide you through building your plan and the like. Emergency management as well. They are also a excellent local resource for learning the aspects of preparedness.
Allie, anything that you want to add into that as far as people making sure that when they are doing their planning, some other things that they might want to consider as far as on the healthcare side of things?
I think the best thing that you can do is make sure your plan is healthy. Practice those things. Don't write it once and put it away forever. That's not helpful to anybody.
Yeah. In other words, play it out. Make it an event. Do kids at school have to go through this kind of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Your kids are going to be a lot more informed than you probably realize. They do all kinds of different things like shelter-in-place drills, fire drills, tornado drills, and even active intruder drills. So absolutely include them.
All of those things. Like I say, again, it's ready or not, we want you to be ready. And that is the key. But all of this really requires you, the listener, to take an active role. Because remember, when an emergency strikes, you are your first responder. I mean, you will be there, either needing help or being able to assist people in your immediate family. You've got to understand what your role is. We cannot expect, if a large-scale disaster strikes, for somebody to be able to be there within 15 minutes to get us out. We're going to be on our own for a little while. That is the sad reality of it. We own it. And we want to be prepared as a community, as individuals, as families, so that when that disaster does occur, we can be resilient and we can survive. And I think that's the big picture there. Have I forgotten anything, guys? You're my subject matter experts on this. You know, I try to lead this conversation down the path the right way, but is there anything that I may have left out?
I think we covered all the important bases.
Okay. Daniel, anything?
Another good way to be proactive is also to develop those good skills that would be useful during a disaster. Things like knowledge of CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or the use of AEDs, which is auto external defibrillators. Those can make all the difference in the world, knowing basic first aid as well. So don't just, oh, I've got my kit, I've got my plan, I'm good to go. Learn those skills, educate yourself, and become even more effective in those situations.
Absolutely. Tanner, I know there was an organization in the county, isn't there, that are volunteers?
Yeah, there are actually two organizations in the county. One of them is called CERT, which the acronym escapes me what the meaning is at the moment.
Yeah.
But they are a group of volunteers that go and staff planned events. And then there's the Cowley County Emergency Auxiliary Group, or Auxiliary Corps, which do weather spotting, response to less planned events, and provide staffing for basic perimeter maintenance and security and things like that.
Okay. And if people want more information on that, they should probably reach out to emergency management.
Correct.
Yeah, they would. Now, you know, there's one thing we didn't talk about, and that is if you're a homeowner or a renter, having an awareness about your property and about your home and about things that you may need to be able to shut off or disconnect in an emergency. Things like your gas, your electrical mains, things of that nature, right?
Having renter's insurance.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, if you can have that. Those are things, I think, too, that you need to think about because, you know, in the event that we had any kind of an incident in a home that where you have gas coming in, if you smell it, you got to know exactly what to do, who to contact, and if possibly being able to shut the supply off, right? So get to know those things. Contact your local utility provider. They can probably do that. Contact fire. The fire departments, they can probably also help assist in helping you in that portion of planning, right? So I think I've kind of covered everything that I'm thinking of. I hope everybody understands what this really is our plea to you to please become involved. We're not talking about having to join a large community group or anything else, but become involved by planning for yourself and your family. You know, if you have loved ones and you care about them and you want them to survive a tragic experience that may occur. And I don't even want to say may. I think in our lifetimes, they will occur. And how you're going to be impacted by them is greatly going to be determined about how willing you are to be prepared. So that's the final words I want to put on this for today. Ready or not it's not a kid's game. You know, here it comes, and it will. And so we're thankful that you've given us an opportunity today to chat with you about these things on For the Health of It, Cowley County. We know that we're going to be back again in a couple of weeks with a yet-to-be-determined topic, so check back with us in 2 weeks because we know that whatever it is we've got going on, we're going to be willing to talk about it and help you become informed as well. So anything else? Any final parting comments, guys? Thank you all very, very much for being here at the table with me today to record this. I'm going to say my farewell, and until next time,
stay well.
Stay well.
Thanks, Cowley County. Thank you for joining us for this edition of For the Health of It, Cowley County. We hope you found it useful and that you'll tell your friends and give us a listen again during future episodes. As always, we end today's segment by replaying a recent Public Health Minute, which is a weekly radio message focused on keeping you healthy. So, until next time, stay well, everyone. The summer break might be over, but it looks like those hot summer days, they're sticking around a little while longer. Triple-digit temperatures. They remind us just how dangerous the extreme heat can be, especially for our children. A child's body temperature will rise 3 to 5 times faster than an adult's. That makes them more prone to overheating and dehydration. To keep your kids safe from the heat, make sure they stay hydrated and take frequent breaks to catch their breath and to cool off. Also, if your child feels lightheaded, dizzy, faint, or is experiencing heat cramps, take them someplace cool immediately and get them hydrated. These are all signs of heat exhaustion, which can rapidly turn to heat stroke. So if you see these symptoms, act quickly. Helping you keep your kids safe from the summer sun is just another way the health department works hard every day to help you stay well.